Rob was born in Lowestoft, and I was born in Windsor. So we came, family and I came to Wenniston in 1948, and we had work done on the house because they reckoned it was bomb damage. Then they said there wasn't a bomb within miles. That's Sunnyside. And Burrowses, that was Alan Burrows, Gwenny Burrows, Doreen Burrows lived next door, and the Blowerses next door to them, Greta Blowers.
So what is now Hill Cottage was a pair?
Was two, yeah, with the well, because we had an electric pump before we had water, and the day their cat fell down the well, they had to come and use our water. So my mother, of course, ran the Wenniston Players. Mrs. Pierce was Alan Burrows's auntie, Auntie Ethel. She lived up, was the one where Tony Cannon lives now. She used to put plays on with the children, and we used to have to be daffodils and bluebells and fairies and what have you. And she did the dancing classes. That's what people have mentioned, the dancing classes, because I went to the early ones and we did the Valita and things like that. And then the older children came and learnt ballroom dancing. And that was at the old schoolroom, at the church room. Because the old schoolroom, it used to have pictures of all a frieze all the way round at the middle, I remember, with brownies, guides and sea scouts. And it was like a frieze all the way round the wall. First went to school, I went to school at what was St. Keen's, which is now the pet shop in the marketplace at Aylesworth. I had a year there, but I wasn't very happy there, so went to the village school. And my aunt was a teacher at the village school. She did the sevens to nines, I suppose. And of course, my aunt obviously married my uncle. So I think they met at the part of mother's concert party.
So then you done Wenniston, and then you went to
Aylesworth area school. And they used to provide bikes in those days. But I had my own bike, so I was given an allowance because I used my own bike. I can't remember, about 9 pence a week or so. I can't. Or else, of course, we went on the bus.
And then you left school at the age of
15. Had a year or 6 months of not doing very much, and then I went to London to learn to cook. We were called pupil cooks to work 5 days and have 1 day at college, day release, London Borough Polytechnic. My friend and I were a bit wild, so we failed all our exams. So I came home because I wasn't very particularly well. I think it was burning the candle at both ends. And then I penned it out, and then I was sent off to stay with my aunt and uncle in High Wycombe, near High Wycombe. I was running a kitchen at them, and I still went to night school and got my exams. It was a very different regime, my aunt and uncle. Then I came home and I married my mother's lodger. Because I came
43 years ago.
Yeah. When we came to Wenniston, quite a lot of us in the family, there were my two great aunts, the Miss Kirks, because Aunt Dora used to be the president of the British Legion for a while. And dear old Mrs. Parsley used to come down, when she got too old, Mrs. Parsley used to come down and see her and tell her what had been going on at the meetings, I remember. So they were the two aunts, my grandmother and my grandfather, and my uncle who married my aunt. And then, of course, when he got married, he left Sunnyside.
Mother approved you marrying that larger chap in the end, did you?
I thought she was a bit unsure.
So by the time Rob came on the scene, my grandfather had died, my two great aunts had died, I'd left home, so she got Sunnyside's quite a big house. We weren't that well off in those days, and so to earn some money, she took in forestry students. It was, what was his name, Mr. Parker?
Johnny Parker.
Johnny Parker came to see her and said,
would she be willing to take lodgers?
So she would, and then John Crussell was the first one, and he was a very upright young man, wasn't he? He looked a typical bird watcher, so Mother had no scruples about taking him in. And then the second one came along on his motorbike. Black leathers.
Earrings. Long hair.
So she said, could I have a reference?
No, that's right. But I can't remember where I got that from.
Write it yourself. Anyway, she took you in, and then there was Paul Sheringham. And then I came home because I was going to go off to Milan to cook there. But I didn't ever get there, did I?
The rest is history, as they say.
And you married in Wenniston Church?
Yeah. Our children were christened in Wenniston Church. Of course, that was dear old Mr. Drew.
Yeah, lovely Reverend Drew, yes. Yeah.
But he was involved in everything with everyone, wasn't he?
We have a lovely story about him because we hadn't got much money, had we? So in those days, you got your tax back if you got married at the end of the tax year. But we didn't want to go on our honeymoon on the back of a motorbike in March. So we said to John, if we have a civil wedding at Norwich and then live apart, can we have a white wedding in May? And he thought that was an absolutely wonderful idea. So this is what we did. And so, of course, we signed the register in Norwich.
So we're officially married, but we didn't consider ourselves married until we'd been to church.
Right.
So the years go by, and they had a bit of a problem at Blythburgh Hospital. They needed a cook to go in temporarily, so I went in to do that. And I was on my own in this kitchen. And John, of course, was the chaplain up there. And he came in with all his black capes and all the rest of it. Felicity, I said, oh, hello, John. He said, Felicity, I've got a bit of a confession to make to you. And I said, oh, what's that, John? He said, well, I was going through the church records, he said, and I couldn't find your marriage certificate, he said, but I spilt coffee all over it, so we're going to have to redo it all. So I said, well, how did you do that, John? I said, because you haven't got our marriage certificate. He said, because we were married in Norwich. And he said, oh, praise the Lord, praise the Lord, he said. I said, what's this, John? He said, well, he thought that he had forgotten to fill the forms in.
Was forgetful. He was the first to admit that he was.
Yes.
Yeah, so he thought he'd forgotten to sign our things.
And that we've been living in sin for 20-odd years.
Yeah, it was. So then we were married from the Sunnyside.
And where did you live when you got married?
Well, we lived there for a little while.
A few months, didn't we?
And then we actually moved to my mother gave the house, sold the house, and went to the pet shop. And we stayed at the pet shop for a while, a month or two. Because we couldn't find anywhere to live. And then the Dell came on the market. Jenny Wilson owned it.
And we had Wilfred or Walter Noller came to do a survey for us?
Wilfred.
And so he came round to have a look around. It was a sad little place. No running water, well water, but it was green. It was quite undrinkable. No electricity, really not very. Anyway, we went to have a look. And Wilfred came to have a look with us. And so bearing in mind, Arthur, this is now, 42 years ago, isn't it?
46 years ago.
Wilfred came to have a look around for us, and I remember him saying, well, for what it is, that's a bit overpriced, but what property isn't today?
Well,
they were on the market at £1,500, and we bought it for
£1,450. Yeah.
So. I've never looked back.
And that's where Mr. George Bird lived at the cottages where, do you remember Mrs. Wickham? Do you remember
Kathy Wickham? Yes.
He lived the other side of her.
Yes.
And he was really broad Suffolk, and he couldn't understand me and I couldn't understand him, but we managed to talk. And he was a Methodist minister, and he was sort of the travelling minister. He would walk, he used to walk.
To the various
parishes, to chapels.
To preach.
Of course, he used to go to the one on Blackheath. He was a dear old boy. Mm. And his son was
Chief Superintendent Bird
in Ipswich. And Mr. Bird always referred to him as the boy. The boy, yeah.
The first year we were married, I was still on the forest at Dunwich. We started at 7:15 in the morning, so it was a 6:30 departure on bicycle. And I'd come back with a sack load of green pine. Well, I hadn't the wit to collect it anyway, green pine. It just smouldered in the evening. And my first job on getting home was to go along to George Bird with empty buckets to fill from his well, because his water was drinkable and ours wasn't.
It was lovely water, wasn't it?
It was lovely water.
Yeah, very.
Bird came in with us and we brought the water.
Yeah.
So we had the basic five improvements that you could get a grant for in those days. It was the pantry, the bathroom, water, tiling the kitchen.
And we had to agree to continue living there, was it, for 5 or 7 years?
Something like that.
If we sold before that time, we had to repay the grant, but we didn't.
We finished tiling the kitchen floor, and Colin was born 2 days later at Patrick's Stead on the same day that Simon Nolloth was born. Pam and I were in hospital together. Simon was born at something like 6 a.m, and Colin was 6 p.m. And Penny was actually born at the Dell.
On a lovely day.
Sunday.
I can remember standing downstairs with Dr. Hopkins, warming our backsides by the fire, talking about shooting. And you'd be giving birth upstairs to Pennywinch, wouldn't you?
When we first came to Sunnyside, there used to be the big flint sort of shed where John Baker lives now. And then Mr. Freeman, it belonged to Freeman then.
Yes.
Got wind of this and told him he'd either got to pay to park his park car there. or not do so.
That would be Mr. Freeman, because he used to own one or two of the marshes up there.
Yes, he's
been down here and done high on
still
it.
Does.
Because Mr. Nolloth used to harvest the two fields, what we used to call the Bishop's Fields, either side of Sunnyside. Of course, my mother used to do the post round. She did it this end of the village. We used to go up with Mr. Scoot to the post office, but that was when the Scoots moved from the little... the paint shop to the big...
to the main post office, as we know
it. Did it for many years, when Clara Block got there. She did Blackheath and Mother did this end. Mother'd go up there at the crack of dawn and sort the letters, do the top end, dash into the house, get Aunt Dora's breakfast, get on her bike and then go... She had to go all the way off as far as to where the Browns farm now.
Oh, right, Redhouse Farm,
Redhouse Farm there. And old Mrs. Noel, she used to have to go up. Yeah, cool. She cycled up to the Holmeses and then walk through... There's a walkway through
across
to,
the path, yeah.
to the Noelses and then back up Bartholomew. We should have delivered your post.
Down Bartholomew's Lane.
Yeah, and down to where your mum lives now, the gardeners.
Westgate, yes.
Gardeners and birds. Well, the bird, yes. Mickey Bird's still there, isn't he?
Yes.
Because I was at school with Margaret Bird. She had long plaits. And then, of course, she would have done the Burke's Farm, Burke. Nelson Wright. She finished at Nelson Wright's. And then Clara did all the intricate bits in the village, which Mother did once when Clara was on holiday. I think I did this round and Mother went and did Black. Yeah, they were a nice couple, Mr and Mrs Scoot. When we had the dances up at the hut, they were some of the best dancers there. They used to... I can remember they were saying, well, where are the men? Oh, the men are all in the pub. And the socials, we used to have socials, didn't we? The billiard table where they used to put the forms on for the boys to sit on while they watched Mother's plays. A bit out of hand in the later years. Dear old Harold was one of her people in her drama group, Harold Hatcher.
How did she manage to rope Nelson Wright?
Yeah, Nelson Wright and Harold.
And I think Tony Cannon.
No, Tony Cannon.
Because I remember him as, wasn't he?
Angel Gabriel. Was when John and Mari did the two mystery plays in the church.
Because they must have taken a bit of persuading, mustn't they?
Yeah, they were great, because there's so many of the village people in it. See people, I was remember saying, oh, well, there's Pontius Pilate going up the road.
So
when we were at the Dell, we had the outside loo. I don't like spiders. And we used to get...
Arthur won't believe this.
Spiders out there. And so Rob always had to go in there to make quite sure that there weren't any spiders.
Get
and
the old
spiders,
harvest spiders in there in the harvest.
Because you know they're the biggest in the country, if found in Suffolk.
So you had a little pump up.
I did, air pistol.
Air pistol. So we used to go in there and shoot these spiders because they were so big. And then they got even bigger.
Bigger and bigger. I had to use a pellet rather than.
Oh dear.
So you started off in the Forestry Commission then, did you, Mum, when you left school? Is that how
it No, no. Well, I actually left school and went to the Duke of Bedford's estate at Woburn as a forestry student. And left after a year on the basis that it really wasn't sufficiently exciting. Went to sea, just over from Lowestoft, just over a year, earned a lot of money, spent it all, and thought perhaps that was going to be a bit of a waste as well, and forestry was a better proposition altogether. So rejoined the Forestry Committee with a placement at Dunwich. Found lodgings at Sunnyside, and you've heard all that, all about that. But that didn't work out in the way it was planned, in that the object was to become a forester within the community. And one of the part of the process was a 2-year practical studentship at a forester of your choosing, followed by a year at a training college. And there were two then, as far as I recall. One was the Forester Dean, and the other was in Penwith in Scotland. And on completion of my 2 years at Dunwich, we'd met and married. Colin was on the way come the September when I was due to go to forestry. Cut a long story short, it was quite lengthy in terms of the correspondence between the chief education officer and me. Basically, could I live, because I was married and with a child on the way, could we defer my entry to college for a year or live out, because one of the conditions of...
Well, it said if I came and joined you, I'd got to live 11 miles away.
That's right. So basically, we said that if we can't live out and I can't defer, I'd better relinquish studentship. And at the same time, the senior forester at Dunwich, a chap called Johnny Parker, internationally renowned for his wildfowl collection, and he lived then at Dunwich St Helena. And his children were whatever age they were, teens. One was doing O-level and the other A-level. And he was given 3 months' notice to pack up and move to Thetford as part of the career progress. And we thought, if that's the way the commission can treat a senior man, he was senior and highly respected, we don't want to know. So, and they all came together at the one time, didn't they? So that was that. So I stayed on at the forest as a tree fella before deciding what else we wanted to do.
Mm. How many letters did you write? 12 letters.
Doesn't sound many now. At the time, we thought it was a lot. I wrote to 11 or 12 companies within a 10-mile radius.
You wanted to be an architect, didn't you?
Always enjoyed engineering, drawing it. That's so I thought architectural or something. So I wrote to 10. And the only company to reply was Garrett. And they said, come in and talk to us. So I remember going on for an interview. And they ended up saying, we can't take you into the drawing office because our formal apprenticeship requirements and so on don't cover. So sorry, but we can't offer you a position in the drawing office. But we do have a vacancy for basically a junior clerk in the buying office. If that would appeal to you, we think you could be of interest to us. And they said, come along, long story short. I joined Garrett's, and 13 years later had advanced a rung or two up the ladder, as it were.
What were you doing when you cycled in Catch the Works bus with Lenny Saunders?
Lenny Saunders.
Bless him.
Come across Lenny?
I heard the name.
I've probably been at Garrett's for 2 or 3 years, and they'd selected me to be a management trainee. I'd had a reasonable education and got a clutch of, you know, the usual stickers. As part of course, I went to Lowestoft College for ordinary national certificate, Norwich for higher national certificate. But as part of that, I embarked on a year's tour around the works. So I literally got my hands dirty in virtually every department, including the foundry. And that necessitated for a period of time getting into work at some ungodly hour, which meant catching the works bus at the White Hart in Blythburgh. And yes, so as Rusty said, for some weeks, if not months, I used to cycle with Lenny Saunders in the dark of the morning. I can remember on one of our return homes, we were cycling past the council houses on the way to Blythburgh.
Yes.
On our way home, and Keith Spindler passed us. And I can't remember what he was driving, but suffice to say, he was going up. And Lenny had a delightfully choice turn of phrase, and as Keith roared past us, and we sort of did that against the year, Lenny came out with the most delightful mouth, which basically came down to, with all sorts of colourful words and dispersed, may your front wheels fall off and go in different directions on the bend you come to, you know. So after 13 years, we upped stumps and moved to Cheshire. Sadly, 3 years after we moved, Garrett's, of course, was no more. So we made the right move in that sense.
What were they producing when you worked at Garrett's, and what was you producing down there?
Oh, a very broad range of capital goods. I suppose the most expensive and most significant product, certainly the highest technical product, related to cardboard box making and printing machines. So every bit of packaging you can think of could have been made on a Garrett Folder Gluer printer of that. At the same time, for the Elliott Group in London, we were making shaping machines, horizontal lathes, 2 or 3 sizes of drill. So all the basic engineering capital goods. And latterly, we went in for 1 or 2 fancy products. For example, dry cleaning machines. And that was something I never could understand and still don't to this day, in that we as a company attempted to market dry cleaners. And there was competition from Italy and other countries, so it's quite difficult. And as a means of encouraging take-up of machinery, we would say, well, look, take a machine and pay for it from the solvent that you recover from its use over, we were able to predict how long it would take, given a certain volume of turnover, to how long it would take. And even that wasn't enough. We should have cleaned up the market. We thought with that, here's a product that's going to cost you nothing over 2 or 3 years.
Yes.
Surely you'll say, yes, please, I'll have 2 or 10 or whatever. But didn't work. Anyway, that was one new line that should have been successful and wasn't. And another one, and I was then chief buyer, one of my responsibilities was vetting all the invoices and clearing for payment. And we one day had on my desk a batch of invoices from a company in Germany for washing machine parts. And I can remember there was a hotline between my dad and a few others as well, and the managing director's office. Hello, can I come and have a word, sir? So I said, can you please explain these invoices from this German company? Bloody cheek. I thought they were going to supply these on a free issue parts basis. So he'd gone over, negotiated the contract, and didn't know what he'd done. that was then. So, well, it was a well-run and successful company. You know, everything was done by hand. Everything was done perfectly. Everything had to balance to a penny. I think we were Gang Garrett's fairly early on in adopting computing. And the first computer as such was basically a Hollerith card printer. And it occupied a room nearly as big as this. And its computing power was probably less than your little machine on the table. And it took an army of 4 or 5 people to feed cards in. It's not greatly removed from the truth if I tell you that in our early years of married life, if during the winter months I didn't shoot a pheasant in the week, we didn't have meat to eat in that week. Times were very, very difficult.
That was when you went to Garrett's, because you weren't earning before anything, I went to speak,
yes.
Were you?
Before, early days, yeah. And a lovely little tale, and I won't mention a name, but what I think examples one of the finest aspects of policing I've enjoyed or suffered in life. A chum and I had gone to a wood not a million miles away from here on a little night walking. And the following day, we had to drive to another village to walk this wood. And the following day, this chum had a telephone call from a local police sergeant basically to say, next time you elect to go out for a little night walking, you might think about leaving your car at home. Wasn't that lovely?
But you've seen some changes in the village in the time.
One or two.
Building up, changing properties. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Some of that is to the good.
So how long have you lived here then?
Well, Mummy bought it because she wrote for Mills and Boone, so you may or may not know. And she did make quite a bit of money at that. So she bought this when we were in Cheshire, and we came down, had it as a holiday home. So we've actually lived here 24 years or so. And when we first came, as you said, there were the two cottages on the corner of Low Road, and then where Hayty lived, that I'm sure that used to be two cottages there. And one of them had a lot of windmills in the garden. This man used to make windmills, and he drowned in a water butt.
That was at St Edmund's Cottage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there was the Walkers, that used to be two. And his mother. His mother was always smiling. She was always on her bike. She had white hair, straight white hair, and a blue berry. There's a cycle everywhere. Hardingham. Yeah. His daughter lived at Birdhaven with her lady friend. Arthur and Graham Pecht lived at one half of Sowell Bay Cottage. And the family called King lived where Ros and Sylvia are. And after them, the Deers lived there.
Mm-hmm.
The Ablets lived in Normandy Cottages, and that was two, because the old couple lived in one half and Dennis.
Jimmy and the other one living Nina.
And they had a son, Dennis.
He died
young. Griffiths lived in the bungalow that's been pulled down.
Wally, yes.
And then there was Mr. and Mrs. Bates lived in Broom Cottage, and he was a retired dentist. And then there was Harper's Farm, because the Nolliths lived in Harper's Farm, didn't they?
Yes.
One time. And the Ashpoles lived there. And Mrs. Dickinson lived at the farm, Heath Farm.
When I came to Sunnyside in 62, it was largely as it is now. Mm. But
And of course, Maurice Stammers's father was at the farm where Nurse Lovett is now.
Yes.
And Shirley Stammers was there, and Geoffrey. I went to school with Geoffrey. I went to school with Geoffrey Stammers, Philip Gardner, Peter Nichols, Clifford Ratcliffe. Because you worked with Clifford Ratcliffe.
Yes, he was in the electrical department.
One of the Feltons, Irene Felton, the 20 children. And they used to walk, bless them, didn't they, all the way from Blythburgh Hospital, Balcombe, to school up here.
When I first came to Winniston as a student, my chums from Norwich used to come down on a Friday night, and we'd go to the Star on the campus, and then a little further afield sometimes. And we'd have far too much, to the extent that you had to close one eye in order to shake the double image. And didn't drive like idiots, drove with that condition pretty reasonably in mind. Didn't see nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
The roads were empty and you were careful and you didn't give two foot to it.
No.
Well, now, of course, it's vastly different.
It used to be an adventure to go on to Blackheath when you lived this end of the village, because it was a bit rough, that engine.
So Jenny, the marshes that I used to walk through when I first came to Winniston, or look on the Blyford marshes here. I exaggerate, obviously, if I say I had to watch where I put my feet.
Yeah.
So as not to stand on snipe, redshank or lapwing nests. There's a lot of truth in it. There were so many, whereas now it's an event if we see a snipe or a lapwing or a redshank come to that, isn't it? So those marshes, I mean, you mentioned change. I mean, that's one of the most profound changes we've seen. What in agriculture, this was a term used, agricultural terms, the land has been improved, whereas in fact it's quite reverse in ecological terms. It might have been improved in terms of the yield of grass for consumption by cattle, but in terms of breeding and feeding site for wetland birds, totally destroyed. Life as a child here, before and after the war, certainly the 40s and 50s, can't have been too bad for
us. That was very nice. Very peaceful.
Yes, and you could more or less do what you wanted to do, couldn't you?